And good morning again to you. Today I would like to speak about one of a variety of spiritual paths. You know, when we are consciously journeying on the spiritual path, certainly we have been unconsciously and semi-consciously journeying on the spiritual path our whole life. But certainly as we get more emotionally and perhaps more spiritually alert, seeking out, searching for a more mature response to the divine, we begin consciously choosing, searching for the most appropriate spiritual path. And there are a variety of spiritual paths. And as some of us might be progressing, utilizing the 12-step philosophy or 12-step spiritual approach, we begin discovering a deeper, more profound relationship and changing relationship with the divine. Most of us perhaps have experienced step 3, the understanding of God constantly shifting as we are growing and open and willing to grow in our relationship with the divine. And those of us who have actively embraced a discipline of step 11, that is, seeking through meditation and prayer a gradual awakening, that through this awakening we have learned that spirituality is a constant journey. It is a process. And to embrace the process is to recognize that we will never, ever know all there is to know, even 1/1,000,000th of what there is to know about the divine and the richness of the divine. Yet, still, being in the process invigorates us, enlightens us, and encourages us. Because this kind of all-embracing oneness, the great mystery, is the final frontier. Today, I would like to talk about one of the spiritual paths because it is a path that is most familiar, especially with Christianity and Judaism and also Hinduism. And that is the spiritual path of bhakti. And the Hindu word simply meaning the path of love or the spiritual path of devotion. And I would like to speak with you about this particular path today. And maybe some of you will resonate with this path. Some of you will say, this is the path that is meant for me. The spiritual path of bhakti is a very personal path. It certainly welcomes personal manifestations of the highest power or God. Personal manifestations and images of God. More than 100 years ago, about 101 years ago, in fact, in Chicago, the World Parliament of Religions was called to order for the first time. And who called this to order were a group of liberal Christians. And the conference was the first of its kind in America. Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Buddhist, Islamic, and Hindu delegates attended this conference. One of whom was Vivekananda, the disciple of Ramakrishna, to many Easterners known as the greatest saint of the 19th century. And there is a wonderful story about Vivekananda when he came to this country to speak at the World Parliament. Because when he got here, he had come as on order by his teacher. But when he got here, there was no room for him. And he thought, well, I've come here all the way from India. Now there's no room for me to speak at this parliament. And so he was in one of the parks in Chicago and dressed in the Hindu robes of renunciate and the ochre colored robes, and people thought he was imagined 1893. people walking around going, look at this very strange, strange man. And he looked very sad, and he just sort of sat in the park and thought, why am I here? But certainly believe that there must be a reason why I've been sent here. And sure enough, eventually a night passed, and the next morning there were a group walking through the park. And the group that was walking through the park happened to know the originator and president of the parliament. And they said, you must be speaking, because they, of course, knew. They had been reading and studying, and they knew all about, you know, the world religions and the different dress that different people in the different religions would wear. And so they said, well, you must be, what is your name? You must be speaking at the World Congress. And Vivekananda spoke up and said, well, I thought I was, but when I got here, they said there wasn't any room for me, so they didn't give me a place. And it's all ridiculous. We'll talk to them. We know the president of the parliament, and we'll make sure that you speak. Well, when he spoke, there were standing ovations. Before he spoke, there was a standing ovation because of the great presence of love that emitted from his being. And during his talk at the parliament, he explained that according to the Vedas, the earliest Hindu scriptures, quote, the whole world of religion is only a traveling, a coming up of different men and women through various conditions and circumstances to the same goal. But in the heart of everything, the same truth reigns. Vivekananda spoke. He continued, the ideal religion would be one which will have no place for persecution or intolerance, and will recognize a divinity in every man and woman, and whose whole scope, whose whole force will be centered in aiding one thing, and that is humanity's realization of its divine nature. These are some of the things that Vivekananda spoke at the World Parliament of Religions in 1893, more than 100 years ago. And since then, of course, there have been parliaments that have been meeting from all of the world religions, speaking of the next spiritual paradigm to come, probably in the next century, of course. And there are some of us who are already embracing that spiritual paradigm shift of the universality of all religions, that there indeed is only one religion, and that is the religion of the heart, in whom the divine dwells. Recognizing all the differences in manifestations as wonderful colors, if you will, in the whole spectrum of the divine, just like in a rainbow. Vivekananda went on to write four spiritual classics about the different spiritual paths. And of course, one of them was bhakti yoga, the spiritual path yoga, simply meaning a path or path of at-one-ment or work or exercise. That's what yoga means, a spiritual exercise, spiritual path of at-one-ment. He spoke of bhakti, or the path of love, as one that is the most personal and uses human representations of the divine ideal of love. He said generally of the bhakti path that bhakti is the intense love of God. When a person gets it, interestingly, gets it, doesn't take it, but gets it. When a person gets it, he or she loves all and hates none. Bhakti does not say, give up. It only says, love the highest. Close quote. That's a very, very important passage. Because certainly, the bhakta, or the initiate of bhakti, the one that follows the spiritual path of the intense love and ardent longing for God and ultimate union with God, does not say give up, but love the highest, hates no one, loves all. Well, who does this remind us of in terms of the great sage, the Western sage, the Western founder of actually wasn't the founder of Christianity, but certainly was the great leader. And that was Jesus, certainly Jesus of Nazareth. Love your enemies. Jesus, of course, was a great initiator of the bhakti path, the path of love. Okay? And in this path of love, of course, there are different stages. And there are interesting obstacles and sidetracks that one needs to be careful of in this path of love, because it does utilize images, if you will, that are more personal and devotional if you are embracing this particular path. It only says love the highest. This is very important. Love the highest only. This is the goal, if you will, of the bhakta, or the person that practices the spiritual path of love. What this path is careful to do is to warn the initiate, to both lure the initiate and warn the initiate. To lure the initiate into the path of love, but to warn the initiate not to make any one object God, him or herself. No matter who it is. So it's important that if one embarks on this path of the love of God, not to get sidetracked by any manifestation of God, the Most High. To use any manifestation, if you will, or name of God as a manifestation, not God, him or herself. The Sufi mystics speak a lot about the 99 names of God. Each one of those names are manifestations of God. Not one of them is God in him herself, does not contain God. Perhaps it would do well to say a word about the three major inner planes, because there are three major inner planes and we can get stuck on them. Okay? And the first, of course, is the astral plane, the inner plane. And the astral plane is basically the plane that that the media likes to talk about when they talk about spirituality. The realm of poltergeists and ghosts and haunting. You know, there are the programs that are on TV. And a lot of these energies, that is about a particular kind of plane, the astral plane. And it is sort of real and yet ultimately unreal, but there's a lot of energy drawn to it. And in this particular inner plane, the entities that dwell in this plane love our attention. They love our attention, so we'll love to sidetrack us. The astral plane also has a whole lot to do with those of us who get into the willful trip, you know, the trip of the occult, but not in the deepest occult, which is esoteric Christianity or esoteric Judaism, esoteric Hinduism, which is the deep spirituality. But the astral plane has a whole lot to do with exciting the ego and the will of the person that gets involved there. And as my teacher says, be careful, Neil, on the inner planes, you're always somebody's food. Just as on the outer planes, in human nature, we're always somebody's food in the phenomenal world. Right? All we have to do is go hiking in nature and we'll realize we'll be somebody's food. And then in nature, all nature is somebody's food. Okay? So in the inner planes, the same thing. So be careful in the astral plane, it's because a lot of energy that dwells there is about sidetracking us from what? The Most High. Sidetracking us from the Most High. I remember being caught in the astral plane, in fact, for a while in my hobnobbing in hallucinogenics in the late 60s and early 70s. Van Morrison even wrote that I actually love this album called Astral Weeks. I would often listen to Astral Weeks to get solace in there. Oftentimes what will occur is that we can kind of, what happens is actually there is a movement and change in the energy centers, in the chakras themselves. And what will happen is they sort of spin at a different motion, at a different rate, so everything else looks different. We're no longer kind of moving and vibrating at the same frequency in our energy. And so things get kind of strange. But the astral plane is not really a plane where we need to dwell, but many, many get caught up in it, especially the young, adolescents, for instance. A lot of young people get caught in the astral plane because it feels more exciting than a lot of religion, which is very boring. Especially to young, passionate, ardent folks who really sometimes are meant for the path of bhakti, the path of love. You know, go to a religious service, be it a temple or a church, and don't really find it there. They see more hypocrisy there, more flatness there, more moral kind of living. Should not. Always a not. Don't do this, don't do that. The bhakti never gets the bhakti yoga never gets caught up in should not. It gets caught up in loving, always loving. But I just wanted to tell you a little bit a few words about the inner planes, because we can get caught in those different planes when we begin journeying in meditation and in prayer. So the first plane is the astral plane. The second major inner plane is the plane of the demigods. Now this may sound strange to you, but you'll probably recognize it when I tell you what that's about. The plane of the demigods are all those historical personages that came here to initiate us into our relationship with God, who we turned into God. That's the plane of the demigods. Buddha, as Buddha dwelled here in his earthly personage, and then people made Buddha into a god. Jesus, in his earthly personage, people worshiping Jesus as the historical person is Jesus, not who he is now, and that is one with the Father. Jesus constantly growing, right? But worshiping Jesus. The realm of the demigods is a very, very powerful plane. It's where all the Greek pantheon gods are. Okay? Gods in and of themselves. What happened in ancient Greece, after there was a deterioration in initiation, people began to worship not the manifestations of the Most High, which were all of the gods in the pantheon, but they began to see each of these gods as separate and as worshipable. Zeus, Dionysus, Apollo, Hestia, Demeter, right? The goddess and gods being worshipped as objects of worship. What happened is deteriorated. Spirituality deteriorates whenever people begin to worship historical personages who were initiators themselves and not see them as manifestations of God, but as God. We're into trouble. We're in the realm of the demigods. And if we give a lot of, wherever we put energy, things exist, correct? Wherever we put our energy, things exist. That's why those dimensions exist, because we put our attention there. It's not by any devil or evil. It's that just wherever one puts one's attention, that's where energy will be present. Okay? Follows a basic rule. The third level of the inner planes is the deepest level, and that's the level that mystical Christianity and Judaism and Islam speak about. And that's that the realm of the angels, the principalities, powers, thrones, dominions that St. Paul talks about, and the Most High. That third inner plane is the plane where all of the attention is directed not to here, necessarily, to our ego, but directed to where? To God the Most High in worship. That's when all of the icons that one sees in these planes of angels and archangels, they're always in humility and reverencing, worshiping the Most High, the highest God. And that's where the energy is directed in this plane. So the reason why I'm telling you this is that in any path, especially the path of attraction or the path of love or the path of bhakti, one can get caught in one of those inner dimensions when one begins to work at that spiritual path in meditation and prayer. One of the best rules to follow is the Eastern rule of neti neti, not this, not this. Just make sure one follows that rule. St. Teresa of Avila, the Catholic saint, was very, very aware of these planes. And she would not make too much, she would not at all exaggerate when things would happen sort of in the astral plane, would want to distract her. You know, the astral plane is about levitation and bodies moving and energy and objects and all that. You know, next, let's go deeper. And St. Teresa of Avila, you know, really was practiced the singularity of heart. And that was one with the highest. Only. And how one would know, I'll never forget when my teacher, when I was a monk at St. John's in the monastery at Collegeville, when I was being taught one day by my spiritual, one of my teachers, and he said to me, when I asked him about a certain kind of yoga that I wanted to do, and I said, well, is this okay? Because it doesn't feel Christian. I mean, it's kind of a Buddhist kind of prayer form or meditation form. And he said, look, so it doesn't matter whether you're on your head spitting wooden nickels. It doesn't really matter what you do. What matters is your attitude of your heart. He says, so if you find out that you love other people more deeply and not your own ego, you're on the right. You're doing it right. So the path of bhakti, the way we can find out whether or not we are really moving on the path, is we don't get so caught up in our narcissistic ego and loving ourselves, but we love others. Our love for others in the world begins to be greater, and we don't talk a whole lot about our spiritual path to other people and make it a big deal. We simply love, and we grow in our ability to love. Just a word about those three inner planes, because I think that they're important. So, the levels of bhakti. First level is the level of shanta, meaning, don't worry about that word, meaning peace. It is the love of peace. And there are five levels. Each level is higher in this path of love, as Vivekananda spells it out. I'm using his spiritual classic, the Bhakti Yoga. It is the peaceful love of God, where the devout seeker rests in the calm and gentleness of the divine. So whenever you feel yourself there, and those of you who are on the path of love or path of devotion, and you really enjoy that level of shanta, the level of peace, of gentleness, that is that first level. Okay? Level two. Level two is the level of dasya, which is servantship, the attachment to one's God as Lord. So all the places in the Bible, those of you who are maybe in the Christian path and studying the Bible, every place you see Lord or Master, okay, that was the disciples at the second stage of bhakti. Whenever one is saying Lord, one is saying, there is a Master. And sometimes this does have to do with one's guru, if you will, or one's master. But Jesus was always leading people to the Father. Always leading people to the Father. But and when Jesus was saying, who do you say that I am? I am is the great thou art, Yahweh. Who do you say who God is? It's God. That's what he was asking, not his ego. We get, in the West, we misunderstand the I statements in the Gospels. The I statements are not about Jesus' ego, his small self. It's about Jesus' big self. You know, and Jesus' big self, self with a capital S, that I is the great thou art, the great I, that Hindus and Buddhists and Christians and Jews for centuries have known. It's the great thou art. Okay? So the path of servantship, if you get to this path, is a path whereby you want to align in obedience your will with the will of a master, your inner teacher, if you will. And that image might be the image of Father, especially in the Christian path, the image of Father, image of Mother, or Teacher. Now, those of you on the bhakti path who may have been wounded by your family religion of origin, Mother and Father, okay? And so you can get stuck in the path of bhakti, you get peaceful, and then all of a sudden you want to be more devotional, and you get in the later path, the second path of servantship, and so Lord, Master, we can get caught in the father-mother image if we have wounds in our family of origin. I think one of the best ways to work with that is, one, deal with your family of origin wounds. Okay, in therapy and or counseling. And two, establish kind of an ideal parent within you. Get that ideal parenting you need. And then three, what you can do is simply see your inner guide in you as the teacher. The Lord, okay, is the teacher, the inner teacher within. And it doesn't have to be father or mother. Those of you who are okay with father or mother as an image, certainly fine. And that was probably the meaning of Jesus' great teaching when he gave the Our Father prayer. Our Father who art in heaven. That was probably about that second path of bhakti. Those who gathered around him who had been initiated into the bhakti path were at ready for that level. The manifestation of God, you see, not just as a peacefulness, but as Lord, as Master. Again, watch the inner planes, though. Be careful. Remember Buddha. If you see the Buddha, kill him. You know, and Jesus was always saying, look to the Father. So, unfortunately, everyone was always trying to deify, and even Jesus' disciples trying to deify Jesus. And boy, were they surprised when he was nailed on the cross. Wait a second, God can't do this. You know, that's why it was really a problem for theology. You know, when unfortunate people caught in the plane of the demigods, when Christianity degenerates later and gets caught in the realm of the demigods, they're trying to turn a very incredible historical personage who is already growing and one with God, no longer the historical Jesus, because he's already resurrected. See what I'm saying? He's already resurrected and one with God. They were, you know, wanting the past Jesus. And that was a real, real difficulty for early theology. But anyway, so the second path is servantship, mastership, the inner teacher. The inner teacher. So in your meditation or in your prayer, visualize or use the term teacher. The third level of bhakti yoga is sakya or friendship. This is a deeper level. God is beloved friend with whom we share our innermost secrets of our heart. Equal love flows between devotee and friendly God. Here, God is playmate. God is actually the playmate. So those of you who need to find new playgrounds and new playmates, well, you can find the most incredible playmate alive, and that is the great divine. At the third level of bhakti, God is the playmate. God is the friend. It is God as friend. There's not a whole lot in the four Gospels about God as friend. One has to go into the Nag Hammadi scrolls. Also, I'm talking about the heterodox Christian Gospels and texts that were not included in the canon. There is, once we get deeper and deeper into bhakti, you don't find it in popular religion. You got to go to the mystical literature that talk a whole lot about God as friend. And which reminds me, because that's why Islamic Sufism is so close to the mysticism of Christianity and Jesus, also the Jewish Kabbalah, is that God, the notion of God as friend is a very, very powerful kind of path when we see God as friend. And Rumi, I certainly recommend to you, those of you who want to know more about that third level of bhakti, God as friend, is get anything by the Sufi poet and sage Rumi, R-U-M-I, or Kabir. But I just wanted to read you some of his sacred poetry, which were prayers. He says, for instance, there is no companion but love, no starting or finishing, yet a road, the friend with a capital F, calls from there. Okay? So Rumi certainly is speaking out of the third level of the bhakti path. It's powerful, isn't it? There's no companion but love. When love becomes a companion, when love becomes your friend, when it actually even becomes a personal, kind of a personal manifestation, don't crystallize it, but when it becomes a personal manifestation, God is inner friend, that's deeper on the level of bhakti. And I think we all get glimpses of all the levels, but we're talking about continually dwelling on one level means that we have kind of spiritually plateaued. Are you with me? So, I certainly recommend the poetry of Rumi to give us a wonderful sense of God as friend. And there's some beautiful, there are others that are quite wonderful here. The next level of the Bhakti path. So we've described peace, servantship, friendship. Three is Vatsalya, which is the love of God as sacred child. It's an interesting one. The love of God as sacred child. Of course, in the Buddhist, Christian, and Hindu path, we have stories of those, don't we? The sacred child. The infant Jesus. Krishna also has infant stories, and Buddha has infant stories. And all this is really about looking at the image of God as child. We are not in awe. We do not revere the child. We absorb the child in our love for it. What Vivekananda says in this particular image, if we begin embracing God as child, he says that awe and reverence, which usually we associate with God, disappear, is absorbed in the stronger aura, sinks entirely into love. It enables the devotee and spiritual aspirant to, quote, detach all ideas of power from the concept of God, so that more intimacy can be possible. Okay? So rather than, in other words, whatever we value and whatever we put power into is distant. Okay? Once we begin to have intimacy, the awe and reverence is more the background, is what I think he's talking about. Not that it disappears, because that's what happens. Isn't that what happens when we get too caught up in human love? We get too close and all of a sudden we don't love anymore. Someone gets too close to us and they don't love anymore. In the spiritual path of bhakti, the closer one gets, the better God looks. In the bhakti path. And by the way, as we progress through the stages of bhakti, we recognize that all human forms of loving, objects of attachment, are all images, really, of the divine. We shouldn't get caught in them. Should not get caught in child, over-deify the child, even. It's part of the path, but we shouldn't over-deify it to where everything else goes into that realm. I think mothers who get caught in wanting their child, I want the child, are probably caught in a distorted version of that level of bhakti. Okay? They should see God as child. Protecting the vulnerability of God, like that story of the baby Jesus in the manger. Okay? The Christmas story of the vulnerability of God, who is in a barn, vulnerable, open to the wild. That is a very, very sacred level in the bhakti path. It's to see the actual vulnerability of God, where one becomes protective like a mother. So all of the images in Catholic theology, which sees Mary, the Theotokos, the God-bearer, holding Jesus, that's this level of bhakti. So the Marianist devotees, those who are devoted to Mary, okay, devoted to the motherhood of God, this is this bhakti path. We're devoted to motherhood itself. Seeing God as child, do you see the role reversal? There's a role reversal. One sees God as child, and we are parenting God at this level. It's not the final one, but at this level, we are actually parenting God. If any of you want to read about this, Meister Eckhart is the mystic that knows about this level, Saint Meister Eckhart, where he talks about the motherhood of God or birthing God. God is child. Saint Francis of Assisi is another one. This deeper level of bhakti. Okay. The becoming character and birthing character of God coming in the world, always new. Okay, we could speak about each of these paths so long, forever, you know, and we'd never get to the bottom of them because they're so deep and profound, but just moving you through these. The last level. Is the Madhura, the level of Madhura, or God as beloved. God is lover and beloved. Manifested, of course, in the sacred rite, in the initiation of courtship, of human courtship and marriage. The lover here recognizes that there is only one beloved at this level of Madhura. God is the beloved. And we are the bridegroom. If we want to get this last stage of bhakti, the final stage of bhakti yoga, we want to go to the Songs of Solomon in the Hebrew scriptures. Powerful. See, my beloved, she comes, leaping over the mountains and skipping over the hills. The image of God is one of the beloved. Or St. John of the Cross, in his wonderful poems based on the Songs of Solomon. Or their love, it's love poetry. Or the poetry of Rumi and Kabir, the Sufi mystics. St. John of the Cross. Oh, St. John, the fourth gospel, when he speaks of the bridegroom. Very powerful, because what we have here is the most profound mystery of Jesus the initiator, who initiated the deepest level of initiation in the bhakti path, initiated his disciples into the Hieros Gamos. That was the mystery of the bridegroom, the mystery of marriage, the inner marriage between the self with the little s and the large self with the capital S. The marriage between ourself and God, beloved and lover, where beloved and lover and love are one in that trinity. That's the highest path of the bhakti. And we can find it in the Gospel of St. John. Of course, it's a Gnostic gospel having a lot of hermetical and esoteric material in it. If it weren't for St. John's gospel, we never would have taken seriously or been able to in our consciousness other texts that have been found. So this is that deep level, of course. And Rumi spoke of this often. The manner and appearance of a prophet, our secret origins. These are born of a woman who still lives inside us, though she's hiding from what we've become. Life is ending. God gives another. Admit the finite. Praise the infinite. We don't need wine to get drunk, or instruments in singing to feel ecstatic. No poets, no leaders, no songs. Yet we jump around totally wild. Songs about someone who has gone beyond the friend. And this one, Into the Beloved. This one is wonderful. Don't forget the nut being so proud of the shell. The body has its inward ways. The five senses, they crack open, and the friend, with a capital F, is revealed. But crack open the friend, and you become the all one. So in the final Madhura level, there is only the beloved. God is the relationship between lover and object loved. And this constantly shifts and grows and matures as we mature. It is the love of self with the small s for the love of self with the capital S. The highest power. The end of narcissism. It is the love of existence itself. And we lose all preoccupation with our ego self or body-mind or the body-minds of others in the world. It is the Hieros Gamos that Carl Jung talked about. The marriage of the self, the small s, with the self with the capital S. The sacred marriage. And this is where the bhakti path leads, the path of the beloved. So remember when we talked about, when Vivekananda spoke generally about the bhakti path, and he said, it is the love for the highest. This is what he's talking about. So hopefully this has been an exercise for you, that there are these images that we use that lead us, that move us on, that aspire us onward, and also give us meaning on the particular spiritual plateau we're on, are only temporary. They're always only temporary. If we dwell there too long, what will happen is we can begin turning the manifestation of God into God. Father, friend, lover, child, Lord, mastery. See what I'm saying? And if we call them historical names, Jesus, Krishna, Buddha. Okay? So, this is the highest in the deepest manifestation of our relationship. Hopefully this has given us a glimpse into this is only one spiritual path. There are many others. And over the course of these weeks, I'm going to talk about different paths. This is the path of love. There's also other paths, three other major ones, and that hopefully we can recognize them in our spiritual paths according to their social manifestations, you know, in terms of our having connected in some historical religion somewhere. We can maybe make some bridges to these paths, and it can help us kind of be in the right movie. Right? As I've talked to you about before. If we find ourselves in the wrong movie, we should leave. I would rather people stay here until I end. It kind of is distracting. But if you're in the wrong movie, afterwards, you don't have to come back. I mean, those of you who aren't in cottage A or B. But even you have a choice. I think it's, what, one, two, or three, and if it's too weird, you don't have to come. So, but, you know, the whole thing, hopefully you can get something from this, but it's important that you choose it. Okay. And hopefully that these paths will give you some connection. You need to be in the right movie. If you're not in the right movie, go to another one. And really, it's only my purpose to give you the smorgasbord of possibilities, right? And then help direct some of you individually in your particular path. Okay? Not to manipulate you into one path, but say, look at all these variety of paths. Which one is your personality geared to? Okay? Which one is your nature also geared to? All right. And next week we will continue with another spiritual path, and hopefully this has been helpful.